Gildan Media, a division of Recorded Books, presents Corporations, Compassion, Culture, Leading Your Business Toward Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion by Kisa C. Shreen. Narrated by Lisa Renee Pitts. Limit of Liability / Disclaimer of Warranty. While the publisher and author have used their best efforts in preparing this book, they make no representations or warranties with respect to the accuracy or completeness of the contents of this book, and specifically disclaim any implied warranties of merchantability or fitness for a particular purpose. No warranty may be created or extended by sales representatives or written sales materials. The advice and strategies contained herein may not be suitable for your situation. You should consult with a professional where appropriate. Neither the publisher nor author shall be liable for any loss of profit or any other commercial damages, including, but not limited to, special, incidental, consequential, or other damages. Preface. I'm a black girl from Tennessee who secured the title of vice president before age 30. How'd I do it? I worked hard. I got my NYU master's degree and earned Series 7 and Series 63 banking certifications. But make no mistake, even with all my accomplishments, I learned that for people like me, a VP title is still considered a privilege, not a right. Here's my story. The post-recession job market in 2008 was challenging for marketing professionals, but after acing 3 interview rounds, I landed a role at a global banking firm. After several months, the firm asked me to serve on their Diversity and Inclusion, D&I, roundtable. This was a responsibility on top of my day job, but it was worth it. It was an exclusive opportunity afforded to the top talent leaders to influence the firm's D&I direction. We would be able to open doors of quality, prospective job candidates, as well as provide inclusion opportunities for existing professionals who had the desire and passion to become managing directors and C-suite members. The prospect of this new role perked me up, especially considering the fact that I was seeing a lot of management turnover at my firm. In the short time I was with the company, I had 4 different immediate managers and 2 different managing directors. Still, I was being recognized. That made me feel valued as a person and secure in my prospects. When I was about 1 year in, the person who hired me left. She had been a mentor, and her departure left me with no one who knew my work well enough to advocate for me. A colleague ominously advised me that things would likely get tougher for our team. What I didn't know at the time was that by our team, she really meant me. I asked for a meeting with the managing director to get a better feel for her and her expectations. This woman recounted how much my previous managing director liked me. The cat's meow was how she described her perception of me. At the same time, she made equivocal comments like how she was disappointed not to have been present in my initial interviews. What did it matter? I was here, wasn't I? It all felt a little off, but I figured I'd be fine. My internal clients and my D&I roundtable colleagues spoke well of me, and my work spoke for itself. Then, a few weeks later, I had lunch with a colleague. She said she expected to be gone soon. We weren't particularly close, but she was the only other black woman in our division. I think this is why she confided in me. I'm having a hard time getting required sign-offs, budget, and even information I need to do my job, she said. I've been telling my old manager about this just to gut-check it with him. He agrees it sounds like something's going on, but he said his hands are tied. I sympathized with her. I let her know I was having my own challenges with the new management. Honestly, though, I brushed off her reported experiences. A lot of turmoil always follows big management turnover. Maybe I was just in denial, because every shred of my instinct screamed my own career was in trouble. Things ground along for several more months in an uncomfortable status quo. I was over 2 years into the job when the managing director told me I'd be moving to a different manager and covering a different product. I had neither the background nor the education to market this product. However, she described the move as a better fit for me. I was advised there would be no training on the product, and I was discouraged from reaching out to the business people who manage the product so I could learn from them. Googling, asking ad hoc questions, browsing websites, and studying brochures was all I had to get up to speed. I also had new teammates. With them, a palpable frostiness chilled the air. I sensed no enthusiasm for me or my work. But, ever determined to make a good impression, I decided to come in earlier, stay late, and speak up more, coming up with as many solutions as possible in meetings. If I expected a thaw in the atmosphere, my efforts produced the opposite. I always participated in non-work-related chats, happy hours, and office banter. But now, one colleague started making a big deal out of the fact that I didn't drink alcohol. Then ribbing got more persistent, at times continuing from happy hour until dinner and beyond. I heard declarations about my presumed lack of social life and lack of friends because I didn't drink. I endured it, assuming it was only good-natured, if a bit misdirected, fun. Then the incidents started to pile up. Once, between meetings, four women from the team were discussing their struggles with weight loss right outside my office. When I got up and walked past them, they pointed out that, since I was thin, I shouldn't have a body complex, except, of course, for my big butt. More ribbing, a little indelicate, but nothing to get upset about. It soon became clear my colleagues were making a proactive effort to avoid me. No one initiated a conversation with me unless it was absolutely necessary for a work-related purpose. To be included at all, I had to insert myself into other people's conversational circles or attempt to kick off a discussion on my own, which was as arduous as kindling a fire with a flint and some dry leaves. Then I went to a holiday house party thrown by one of my team members. Here, the exclusion I'd been sensing kicked into the highest gear yet. As usual, I walked over to a group, trying to find an opening. When I joined the circle, my colleagues stopped talking, dead cold. They regarded me for a bit and melted away. By this time, no one was talking with me or engaging with me at work. No one addressed me in meetings or bantered with me outside of meetings. If I asked why I was being ignored, I got a pat answer. I can't really understand your comments during meetings. Other times, a colleague would act as if I needed an interpreter, turning to another with, "What I believe she is trying to say is." If you've ever had this kind of experience, You know it can be an elusive one to describe and pin down. Because how do you depict a lack, a something that is not there, the encouragement that's absent, the nods of interest that don't exist, the inquiries about your comments and thoughts that never happen? It's not until these things build up into unmistakable avoidance and silence that you understand something is going on. Like this incident. A colleague and I bumped into each other when turning a sharp corner near the ladies' room. "Excuse me," I said. She gave me a good, slow look up and down. Then she walked off without a word. This woman was a terrific conversationalist, always ready with a quip or a punchline. She was not the sort to be caught short by a stumble near the bathroom. My colleagues seemed to be following some secret rule book with regard to me, and they were following it to the letter. I decided I needed to do something. I would meet with my immediate manager. I had no job description, no training, and was excluded from the team. But dwelling on that wasn't going to get me anywhere. I reasoned there must be a way I could support the success of the team and engage professionally, at least until I found another job. Maybe my manager could help. I approached her with a simple question. What could I do to better serve the team? To be honest, Kisa, I really feel your brain synapses don't connect with each other. Wow. I sucked in breath to steady myself. Lack of synapses? It was astonishing. I was ready for her denials, for the I don't know what you're talking about comeback, even for severe criticism of my work. But this woman was saying the problem was with my actual brain. Of course, I pressed for her to explain what this meant. She went on to clarify that, in her opinion, I didn't understand certain concepts intellectually. This rendered me incapable of producing outstanding or even adequate work products. My brain and my neural connections were simply not up to the task. To my best knowledge, this woman, who held an entire conversation with me focusing on brains and synapses, held neither a neurosurgeon's nor a neuroscientist's degree. What she did hold was my future at that firm, in the palm of her hand. I left her office. A short time later, it arrived. Failure. I was called into HR. The managing director was there, as was the manager, with the opinions on my gray matter. They told me my services were no longer needed, effective immediately. They wished me the best. Then the managers embraced each other as if they were the ones who'd gone through an ordeal and left the room. I departed the building with my possessions. Nothing had protected me. Not my NYU degree, not my Series 7 and Series 63 certifications, not my previous accomplishments at that very firm. I thought about warnings that elders and friends gave for years that I just hadn't wanted to believe. This is just how corporate America is when it comes to people of color. They've been treating black people like this for years. Folks in charge could care less about people who work for them, especially when they're black. They only care about making money and looking out for their own. Maybe it was all true. But maybe I could do something different with the situation. Something different than accepting how things were and just give up. I took a little while, but I was able to find a way. I realized I could choose to have compassion for a manager who insulted my mind instead of inspiring my work. So I chose compassion for her. I came to understand that I could choose to forgive my misguided colleagues who had bullied me instead of supporting me. So I forgave them. It dawned on me that I could find a different path, one that would change such realities in the workplace. I could dedicate my future work to improving others' corporate experiences and demonstrate kindness and equality in leadership. So I chose all of that, too. I made these choices because if I and people like me don't speak about the need for greater compassion and equality in business, those words may never get spoken. If we don't do something about it, those deeds will never get done. This is why I've written this book. Sure, there are cruel, cocky leaders who build and operate the world's largest institutions. But kind, committed, and compassionate leaders are also at the helm. Those voices need to be amplified. What those leaders are doing and how they are doing it needs to be documented and understood. Why? Leaders who choose kindness, commitment, and compassion as their leadership style see improved corporate performance and greater financial return as the result. Yes, you read that right. Increasing compassion and empathy in C-suites is not just good for workers. It is good for the bottom line. How can we learn from and be the leaders who choose kindness, commitment, and compassion as their leadership style and who see greater corporate performance and return, as well as greater humanity in the workplace, as the result? This book answers that question. Because many of us have experienced a work environment like the one I have described, being shut down or talked over on a conference call repeatedly, seeing internal job offers that went from a sure thing to being rescinded under dubious circumstances or after the interviewer sees your complexion, learning about the meeting before the meeting, where a decision was made before you entered the room, rendering the meeting to a mere formality. It's disappointing, even outrageous. These situations still happen, especially knowing the generation after us will have their own similar stories. I hope that people like me, sharing our stories, will, at a minimum, let them know they're not alone. During COVID-19, cruelty to workers reached a new extreme. Employers previously overlooked mental and emotional workplace hazards, especially micro-level activities that are hard to legislate and impossible to prove. Now, employers have shifted to actions that are more brazen. Inflexible paid sick leave policies for workers who engage the public, largely marginalized populations, deficient work-from-home procedures, and insufficient platforms embracing employee innovation that could bring companies out of difficult business environments. Confronted with these realities, employees are refusing to give up basic dignities and professionalism in exchange for a paycheck. Employers' ethical breaches and responses to employee well-being risks point to the need to commit to one overarching goal. Employers should build cultures that nurture employees' purpose and talents and inspire them to create solutions that enrich employees, serve customers, and increase revenue. This can only be done in environments where every employee feels just as important as the shareholder. Each of us, at every level of leadership, managers, directors, associates, and assistants, arrive at work with a choice. Choose actions and words that affirm productivity, inclusivity, creativity, and profitability. And if you and your company don't know how to achieve inclusion, equality, productivity, compassion, and increased revenue in the workplace, you can learn. Let's get started. Chapter 1. Inclusion, Equality, and Compassion in Business. An Overview. Changing the course of a culture can be like changing the course of a ship. You turn the wheel slowly. The ship moves in 2 or 3 degree increments at a time. The degrees of movement are imperceptible, especially relative to the ship's size. Those on board may not perceive a change from 1 minute to the next, but after a certain length of time, they start seeing small changes in direction. Finally, those slow, steady, and careful minor turns yield a complete change in the direction of the ship. Ironically, it may feel to those on board that the change happened all of a sudden, but in fact, the ship had been turning for a long time. This is a good analogy for what is happening with traditional corporate culture. Decades of lack of equity, lack of inclusion and inequality are slowly shifting the course of business toward a culture of fairness and ethics in employee treatment, changing the way we do business and how we interact with employees has been a slow process, yet it remains an imperative one. As we enter the post-COVID-19 and Black Lives Matter, BLM, era, the move toward a new compassionate culture with equality and inclusion as a foundation is even more urgent. A compassionate culture empowers people to develop new ways to solve business problems and deliver solutions. For employees to tap into these higher levels of learning, creating, and working, they must feel valued, included, and treated ethically. Compassion in business means creating a culture in which equality, inclusion, and kindness are foundational principles integrated at every level. Through a compassionate culture, employees have the agency to bring creativity, innovation, intelligence, and imagination to their jobs. A business can't be compassionate if it's not willing to practice equality and inclusion. Equality and inclusion are not the same as compassion, but they do go hand in hand. They complement each other. Practically speaking, companies that embrace decent pay, diverse hiring, inclusive language, and ethical behaviors likely have compassionate cultures. Just how seriously have corporate leaders taken their responsibility to be compassionate, just, and equality-focused up until now? The data speaks for itself. 2014, Facebook admits it has more work to do in recruiting after reporting 74% of their U.S. senior workforce is white and 77% is male. 2019, 5 years later, Facebook has a U.S. senior workforce that is 65% white, 25% Asian, and 67% male. All other ethnicities still report single digits. 2019, Uber expects a near $90 billion initial public offering, IPO, even as their drivers strike over low pay. 2019, hundreds of McDonald's workers in U.S. and U.K. cities staged walkouts over low wages, as well as made accusations that the fast food giant had an unsafe work environment and allowed sexual harassment to take place. 2020, Black workers at Adidas protested outside the sportswear company's U.S. headquarters in Portland, Oregon, saying they had experienced racial discrimination in the workplace. This, despite the company brandishing a public image of being anti-discrimination. Organizations that represent the global corporate world, such as the World Economic Forum and Business Roundtable, have given us hope that the old ways of doing business are changing based on statements they've made. For example, in 2019, the Business Roundtable's updated commitment noted the following: investing in our employees. This starts with compensating them fairly and providing important benefits. It also includes supporting them through training and education that help develop new skills for a rapidly changing world. We foster diversity and inclusion, dignity and respect. Employees, suppliers, communities where businesses are located, and even organizations and governments are all invested in the business world. Whether they realize it or not, they all have a stake in corporate diversity, equity, inclusion, and commitments to dignified, respectful treatment of others. Diversity is a term used to describe a workplace composed of employees with varying characteristics, such as sex, gender, race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, and disability. Inclusion refers to a workplace environment where the diverse backgrounds and perspectives of individual workers are embraced and respected, which promotes equivalent access to opportunities and the full contribution of employees to the organization's success. Workplace equality involves providing the same level of opportunity and assistance to all employees, regardless of gender, race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, disability, and so on. This includes pay equality, when women and men are paid at the same rate for performing the same job. Equity involves providing people what they need to make things fair, and it naturally evolves from a workplace that promotes and maintains diversity, inclusion, and equality. Employees and suppliers are invested because they work at the companies. Communities are invested because they share natural resources with the companies. Organizations and governments depend on companies' partnerships to support societal change. People invested in positive, forward-thinking movements in the business world hope that words like those just defined would be followed by deliberate action. But just when employees, suppliers, and communities thought companies would do better, many actually got worse. Putting people first. In recent years, employees have become emboldened and louder about fighting infractions and inequities in the corporate world. Walkouts have become more orchestrated. Workers have protested unfair pay in an almost synchronistic style across regions. Demands for racial justice have grown more sophisticated. Brands have been persuaded to show solidarity as racial justice activists leverage the power of advertising to hit the digital economy in a new way. Factory workers unapologetically raise their voices at feeling coerced to work in environments they felt were unsafe during the COVID-19 pandemic. Rather than fearing potential retaliation, these workers demonstrated their faith that the wider society would support their demands for greater protections. For example, Shipt, a same-day delivery service owned by Target Corporation, came under fire for lowering its delivery drivers' pay amid the COVID-19 pandemic in 2020. A time when home delivery of groceries and consumer goods was surging. Workers protested the pay cuts with walkouts and work stoppages, arguing that it was wrong to reduce their pay when making deliveries posed a health risk. Earlier in the year, shipped workers had also staged walkouts over the...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?